You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome back to part two. This is the second part of a special episode of Comedian's Comedian Podcast with Dara O'Brien to celebrate episode 450. In the first half of this part, we're going to discuss Dara's ranking in the comedy world and the struggle of touring a show across the world as a family man. We're also going to discuss including local references within a show or whether to simply implement the Vienna model. That's some absolutely classic, Dara. You can join the Insiders Club at patreon.com/comcompod, where you can watch the full special now. Without further ado, here is Dara O'Brien. Last time you were on the show, we talked about how you couldn't tell if you were the bottom of the mainstream or the top of the cult.
Oh, yeah.
And I wondered, sort of with that in mind, you mentioned at the very beginning of this conversation that you're not in the Netflix stable. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about not being in the Netflix stable.
I think that I'm never going to be because I think I'm now just too old. I am. There's a filter of me going because I'll be 52 in a couple of weeks' time. And anything I say about this is never intended as a complaint or as a thing. I think this is showbiz, and there are new generations come along. Whatever the it was like when Mock ended. Mm. There's an element of like grand. Yeah, I was given a really good go. And built an audience from it, and now there's a kind of I'm in that. Well, how much more time do I want to spend trying to impress people? Which is impinging on my thoughts for the first time, and how much energy do I have to rehustle at this stage?
Yes, because that's particularly if you start making forays into social media and a new approach.
Yeah,
do you have the energy for what the young people call the grind set?
Yes, yeah. So I'm not sure So I don't begrudge the fact that other younger comics, because I spoke about this always, that this is how it works. This is showbiz. I find it very weird when older people go, oh, I'm not getting the amount of, no, you're not. That's, you know, and I will take turns to say to Ed Gamble in 10 years' time, there will be a new Ed Gamble. And he will get the shows that you got
the
that
new
I
Ed Gamble has already been born.
Yeah, he's out there somewhere. He doesn't know he's a new Ed Gamble.
Oh, he knows. Yeah. And he's making a beeline for you, yeah. Like Ferdinand Kingsley, the baddie in season two of Jack Reacher.
Oh, okay, fine.
I did that. Travelling
yeah.
over
more,
there.
It Follows.
God, that's a great movie.
It follows as the life of comedians, where you'll slowly walking towards you is a younger version who's doing, you know,
more digitally native version of you.
Absolutely, more reference, gets current reference, knows what
they. And in the case of your Kitsons and your Rob Ortons, they know a deeper truth than yours.
Slowly walking, and you can run from it, but you can't ever fully escape it, because at one stage it will kill you, and then instantly it then gets followed by something else, which goes and follows them. So that's showbiz, man. So I'm kind of an interesting. This is a weird phase, because I will end up doing more tours, because that's all I know how to do. But it's a. You're kind of going, okay, grand, there was a point where I spoke about this 20 years ago in interviews. I'd say, here's how it works. You're hot, it's grand. Then in comedy, you just disappear. You go, and for 25 years, I'm exaggerating slightly, but you fall off. You're no longer hot, like whatever's grand. And then 75, national treasure. So if you can survive, if I can make it to the next 23 years, I'm fucking laughing.
I was chatting to a brilliant comic in Bristol recently whose husband is 57, and it was kind of, she was relating the story of him talking about a career move or having had a lucky break whereby he was the surviving member of a department, you know, and wondering what to do next. And she was sort of talking about patting him on the back and going, "You've done it. You know, you've done it." And we were just talking about that, like, he's not at retirement age yet, but there is a point at which you kind of go, I mean, I think I said at the time, he's broken the back of it. And part of it, even for me, I'm 46 at the moment, and the idea of, like, maybe 10 years from now feeling like, well, maybe I've done most of the stuff I was going to do. As a 52-year-old at the moment, let's just talk a little bit about... not about your decline by any means, but that, what is that sense of, like, you've done tour after tour? I think at the time we last spoke, which is a long time ago, you were talking about the next one might just be 100 dates rather than 150.
They kept going up. What happened was that at that point, that was like 2012, 2014 or so, we started doing international dates. We started doing Oslo.
Oh, basically. I see. And you're not going to reduce them then when you can go and go to the whole world.
We did Svalbard, we did Athens, we did, and then did Australia. And that added this whole kick. But for the first time this year, I found myself going, that's the third time I've been in Buda. I don't think I need to see Buddha again. And there's an element of that, like
the global version of the it's a circuit and you just keep going round it. You know, the comedy club circuit. You're in the such and such a dressing room for the fifth time, and you're like, this again. You get that with Buddha. I don't even know where Buddha is.
Buddha is just about Tromsø, in northern Norway, but that's not Tromsø. and Tromsø is magical. And
so there is. There is the danger of kind of becoming careworn about the international circuit.
Yeah, exactly. Because that was a huge burst of energy and new places and stuff like that, and then at some point, look, at some point you're going, I'm flying a lot, which is bad in its own way, but also but I'm also a lot, you know, if I'm not getting off the plane wherever I go to go, and I'm going to walk all over this city, I can't wait to explore this place, you know, and then go out on stage going, oh you've a thing, you've a which is amazing. Then if he finds it back in going, hello again,
back to Buddha, great to be here, last time I didn't get round to these three observations. is that guy still there?
Then you're just, then it's just another gig, and you're kind of going, it's a gig with a lot of travel and family, and you're away a lot.
Talk to me about that. Talk to me about family. Something I've noticed is my kids are now sort of nearly 8 and 5, and I love saying their ages on the podcast because I know there'll be people listening who are currently, I haven't had kids yet, and, you know, and they'll be like listening through the archive, go, what, how old?
Yeah.
I'm feeling almost agoraphobic about leaving the house because I feel like every moment not with them is wasted. I mean, they do my head in a lot of the time, but I have a real sense whereby the last couple of years have been increasingly a challenge to go up and do a gig in Newcastle. Brilliant. Do the stand. What a room. Been working, you know, like took a long time building that relationship. And now part of me is like, well, that's stealing a whole weekend of my kids. They're both at school and I'm going to be away the whole weekend. Had you encountered that? Because obviously you're on colossal dates, globetrotting, colossal tours. But as a man with kids,
you'll find if you were to compare the schedule I have, say 4 tours ago, schedule now, it's very much 3 or 4 a week rather than 5 or 6 a week. And so we've actively narrowed that down. The things are over a longer period of time. This show is over 2 and a bit years to do 175 days.
Yes,
which sounds really huge, but then
it sounds huge, but it's not really.
And so I'm aware of that. Aware that they're interacting with me about it, like my absence. When they're interacting with you about your absence more, you know, it's grand. That's your way.
That has just started happening with me now, with my daughter going, Daddy, why do you have to go and do another show? Yeah. Oh, God.
There is, however, I think if you're doing a thing that you love, they should see you doing a thing you love. If you're doing a thing that you've worked to get to, they should see you doing that. Otherwise, they just see me pottering around the house. And we're in the era of Daddy Pig where the status of dads is so comically played up anyway, that's useful that there to be some competence that you can demonstrate.
Is crucial.
The ongoing dialogue is always, oh, Daddy's
stinky office. Dad at the butt of all the jokes. Where does that come from? I've no idea.
We are paying big time for
a lot of reparations for a lot of presumed, you know, patriarchal stuff, like that. So it's crap. So it's a and also for a long time it was Daddy's Off on His Holidays Again. So that's, and that's like, for a long time, it still is. It's like, I mean, when I go away to America, it'll be when you're off your holiday. My wife would literally, I'll say at the table, I go, please stop referring to them as my holidays. Go, and then I'll make the mistake of contacting them going, yeah, no, I'm not gigging tonight, actually. I'm just out in wherever, like, whatever. The I'll say things like, I rang her from Vienna. I'll bring Vienna back in a second. We did a gig in Vienna, first time in Vienna. Went over the day, because I tried to get over the day before and see stuff. Just to go, hey, it's here we are. You do a lot of music. I mean, really deep observations. Like, there's a lot of music here. Whatever. What's with the But and then I rang her once, and she said, "Oh, are you not on stage?" And I said, "No, that's tomorrow." She said, "Why are you over there now?" I said, "You know I do. You know I always go over." But there's still like a negative check mark of like, "Oh, you're on your It's difficult to those 2 hours you do on day two are difficult to use as justification for the, you know, that we don't think you're having. You've carved a ridiculous." So the model I may have created is, you know, their inspiration when they see people say, "What did you learn from your father?" is to swing a gig that allows you to essentially live the life you've always wanted to live, like night times and and then not, and if you can get away with that, she picks back, like, you're laughing, like, Vienna was, here's the thing, I have a second version of the show called the Vienna Model, which we pompously call it the Vienna Model.
Why do I know you've got the Vienna Model? I may have said it to you,
because the Vienna Model is when I go to somewhere where I've not, generally somewhere I've not been before, or somewhere I've not been in a while, let's say, and it just doesn't feel like I'm going to do that story. So there are times when I've opted out of doing the story. And Vienna was one of them, because the show started late. And I'd not been in Vienna before, and you are going, well, for the first time I'm here, rather than doing that, I'll take 30 minutes of stuff from the previous show that just works. And I know it's good, it's stuff I do all the time.
And you've never been to Vienna before, so you know they've not seen
it. So it's fine. And then it's the boom, 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 ha, ha, ha version of the show. So you don't do that. And I've done it either in places where I thought it's late, and this is going to, which means the story's going to arrive in late, for example, or it's weird, as in Gibraltar. Gibraltar is a weird gig in a it's in a cave, and they put in a kind of seats for sound and light show for the cave, and then realize we've accidentally built an 800 seat theater, so we'll bring over comedy shows, and but it is in a cave, and there was like, and we did two 90 minute shows on one of the nights, and then the other show was a full show, and I thought, well, maybe I'll do it there, but a woman had a medical thing in the middle of it, and we had to break, and I thought, no, fuck this, and I can click very easily from proper show to Vienna Model. Why model? Vienna.
I know, I love it. It's so you. And I wanted to ask, on the basis of the Vienna Model, what other, because we've had boom, 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 ha, 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 we've had Trust Me, I'm a Comic, what other kind of terminology? What's your kind of private terminology of comedy? Can you think of any other little things that you talk about?
Hang on. Oh, right. No, I'd like to coin, if I can get to coin a term, I would. I would be delighted to create an industry term for it. Let me see if they accidentally come back.
Like, or what's the one that Stuart Lee identified that you do? It's like Dara O'Brien's truncated something.
Oh, yeah, this is the air thing that I would hold attention by going, that's a kind of a common, yeah.
Yeah, that is a common thing. I think it was a bit unfair to attribute it to you, because I recognise it in other people a lot more. That thing of finishing a sentence and going,
holding your attention.
And then, yeah, exactly. Like, not letting anyone else interrupt. Oh, the fact you're, like, normally you don't let them interrupt by making them laugh.
I just did it again. It is, I'm sure it's some, you know, male technique that women have not realised. This is what you have to do. You just go at the end of the thing, and I still hold the conch.
The patriarchy will crumble.
I hold the conch. If I keep going so the point while I'm trying to think of the thing I want to say, none of you can come in now because I'm still making a noise. That's essentially what it is. Panel shows, it would be very useful. I have, by the way, already bagged the autobiography title, "Do Air Is Human."
There we go. That thing of holding attention reminds me, I'm for a little while was the warm-up man for ITV's Loose Women for my sins. And one of the camera techs said to me that they'd noted, one of the camera operators said, there's this thing whereby when they do a joke, the ladies will grab their cup of tea and wiggle it around because it makes it impossible to cut away from. So they get a they manage to hold the attention of the camera.
Oh, that's interesting.
But they go, well, that's what I said. Like this, because if they manage to do it from the end of... I don't even know if they're aware of this, but that was the theory of this camera operator a long time ago. He probably doesn't work there anymore. Certainly not worth sacking. But but doing this as a means of... Like, when they stop moving, the camera can cut away. And as long as they're still, that's what she said kind of thing.
I love the fact that many of these are said to new people coming through as if these are tricks of the trade. Oh, yes. What you got to learn, kid, is you got to learn how to do the elongated holding pause. I mean, you're not going to go anywhere with your like bag of jokes you've written on pieces of paper, like whatever it's grand. You have to know how to do them. But also, am I right at the end? Like, so it's like, so you're definitely going in or definitely not going in, or, you know, that thing. K's are funny sounds and other ones are not. Like, this kind of idea that there's somehow these magical rules, these things, and I'm not sure if they really are.
What have you? Oh, let's get back to your notes. We don't have a lot of time left. So, which is your favourite thing to talk about from them?
The only time somebody objected to the show was a man in a bar. We went to did the show in Birmingham in the Hippodrome, which is fabulous, wonderful show, lovely place, always a great room. Then went for drinks afterwards and ended up in a pub directly across from the Hippodrome. And I was sitting there and a man came up and said, do you want to know what I thought of the show?
Ooh.
Yeah. And I said, sure, I said. And there's other tables. I mean, no meter could have measured the lack of interest I had in this guy's take on the show, really, from how he started it, like whatever. But sure, I said, absolutely. And he said, well, I enjoyed the first half. And I said, okay, I think there's an absence there we have to address.
And I repeated, sure.
Sure. Okay. And then he said a thing which I've had a gut feeling that he spoke to a certain unspoken fear that I had, but then spoke to an interesting cultural thing, because he said, I don't come out to hear something like that. I came out for a comedy show and I didn't come out to hear that. Okay. And I said, okay, well, you know, he said, that's the kind of thing, you know, that people maybe will talk to their friends about, but they won't go and make money on it. Now, that isn't the unspoken fear. That's the somebody just going, I was boring, didn't care that much. That was always a gut worry that this is indulgent in some sort of way. But then he drifted into, you know, you don't go around making money off this stuff. They don't go around making money off this stuff. Yeah, it's grand. He said, and I obviously hackles went up at this point, so it had become a far more tense conversation. And I said, what was your problem? And he said, there's a time and a place. And I turned and pointed at the building we'd just been in and said, he said, there's a time and a place for stories like that. And I said, I turned and pointed and said, it's a fucking theatre. And that's grand. I mean, that is literally the place for stories like that, like whatever. But a lot of it, I think, was he was Irish or of Irish descent, and it was, you're talking Ireland down in Britain.
Ah.
I think about it with that. Now, then...
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then, actually, he had two daughters that came over, and they said, okay, we didn't like the way you said something about the church. And I'm going, I didn't say anything. I literally pointedly don't say anything about the church, but there's one joke about nuns and that. And they objected to this, and they're going, oh, fuck that, like, Jesus. Can't be dealing with that, you know, if you can't take one gag about the church. Mm-hmm. And like, given how much I could have said about the church in this specific story, I didn't say that. But that was a thing that I heard. It was an Irish guy in Birmingham, or a guy, I think a long time immigrant, it was probably the best, as far as I remember. But he was talking Ireland down.
It's interesting because the thing, if you could be accused of talking Ireland down, what you're talking down is a very specific, archaic policy that needed to be taken down and destroyed.
And they were delighted to take it. Yeah, these kinds of but still, that's our business and it shouldn't be discussed. I felt it was a bit of that. Maybe that he was just. Or who knows what other things may have been at play there. Sure. God only knows what other things
that
might have
layered,
been there.
Sounds layered, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And there's something else because he was very angry about it. His daughters had to take him away. And I'm like, I was quite shook, and I got quite, and Martin, my tour manager, was there going, well, do you want to go? I said, no, I fucking don't want to go. They've gone. Let's go to their table.
And that's some big Dara energy there.
So we took their table. And then on the way to the bathroom, there were two other people, groups people who had been at the thing, and I chatted to them about it. And I said, and they were like, oh, no, we loved it. We thought it was really interesting. And I said, but then they were English, so they were thrilled.
we loved how you talked Ireland. Yeah,
that was our favourite bit. Because, you know, it's always so confident, Ireland. But it was, yeah, so that was the one time. Occasionally, you have people going, you know, maybe it's a bit serious, whatever. But, you know, I think because there's so much other stuff in it. Like the show itself was 90 minutes plus 30 of this. So, you know, and even the 30 of this has various things and builds up or whatever. But the, it fed into a thing of going, we were crippled by, do we sell it as this or not sell it as this? And that was a huge thing. Yes. Because on the one hand, you want to get credit for doing a thing which is different and interesting and serious. On the other hand, you don't want to push people away because they'll think it's a whole evening of.
You don't want to bait and switch their expectations, do you?
Yeah. Yes, well, okay. Well, actually, no, you don't. People go, you never want to say what the comedy show often you don't say what it's about because people get ideas in their head and they go, oh, I don't see that. You're like, you know, the way my argument, as I may have said before, is you know, Beyonce doesn't, people don't go, what's the new album about? And she'll go, what's it about?
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. Yeah, that's it. I always think that your job is to do precisely what you want to do, and they opt into you want
absolutely.
To do. They just don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. They come into the room. You get, once you're in the room, you're mine, and then we'll do what we want to it. So I don't want to give away too much of why you're in. I don't want to know why you're in there. I don't want you to be in the room for a specific purpose other than, fine. Okay, you do whatever it is you're going to do, because that's when it works. That's when I can let you go quiet and I can tell you a serious thing, and then I know it's going to pay off, whatever, and you're in the room. More difficult when you're, you know, when it goes into the listings, the TV listings, you know, do we say it? Do we not say it? You know, because you wanted to be, you know, are you giving away too much about the whole thing? It's an awkward one. I mean,
I found exactly the same with the climate change show.
Yeah,
I didn't want to say my big fat climate show. Because I thought people would just opt out of it. You get 10 flyers and one of them says climate. You go, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, not even recycling that one. But then how do you manage those expectations? How do you get people to engage with a thing that they will enjoy it, but they won't opt into it necessarily?
Yeah. I mean, because I think if you said about this one, if you say it's a show about this, there will be a certain number of people go, oh, it'd be really interesting seeing that. That'd be very different than them to do. And that'd be interesting. I mean, look, you know, we've seen massive, Mike Birbiglia is a very good example, Nanette, you know, is a very example of big revelatory shows, far more storytelling than mine, that have, you know, found their an audience, huge audience, who were enthusiastic for that, like the, but you're, it's the, knowing that audience is there on that rock, and then you've got this audience here who will come along because they're expecting the boom, 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 ha, ha, ha. So, it's interesting, he said, yeah, because the man said, you know, you're making money off this, and I said, no, I'm making the exact same amount of money because I'm not selling the show on the back of this. You're just coming in. In fact, maybe for the next show, the people who go, oh, that wasn't really what I liked, so I'm not going to go see
maybe
it
you'll
again.
Make less money.
I'll make less money.
Did you think of that in time to say to him?
I don't think he was following the delicate economies of show.
Well, hopefully one day he'll listen to this. he'll hear the accurate
because he follows all my work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this is Dara. More from Dara shortly. Coming up in the second half, I put your questions to Dara, including the possibility of bringing Mock the Week back to a new channel and, of course, some chat about his legendary stint in Taskmaster. You can catch Dara's special So Where Were We on the iPlayer and find out more about him at a variety of easily Googleable places. And you can find out what I'm up to with a quick trip to stuartgoldsmith.com. The key things I'm up to include the McCunliffe Comedy Festival, where I'm doing a special edition of Redacted, which is a sort of knockabout multi-guest com-com flavoured sort of a game show. So you can come along and see that if there's any tickets left. You can also see my award-winning climate comedy show at... when is it? 8 p.m. On the Saturday of Machynlleth and at the Wells Comedy Festival later in May. And if you fancy having a little look around stuartgoldsmith.com, you can find out more about the various shows and climate comedy sets that I offer to organisations of all sizes to refresh and recharge their climate comms. Sounds intriguing? Well, if it does, you're probably someone who would like to find out more about it and maybe use it. But if that doesn't sound intriguing, or it just sounds like confusing gunk, then ignore it completely. Fine by me. Let's get back now to this final section of the second part of this episode with the brilliant Dara O'Brien. Before we wrap up, I have a couple of audience questions. This is just a quickie. Paul Savage asks, there was a variety show he did called 28 Acts in 28 Minutes. Do you remember that? Dear to my heart. It was in the I was there supporting a friend who was an escapologist on it, and it was in the green room of that. I went, fuck it, I have to become a stand-up comedian. That was like, that's really? The exact timing. Yes, that tipped me over the edge. But he said, Paul says, all the other comics did their set. Dara followed a roller skater and spent his entire minute taking the piss out of roller skaters. It was clearly not material. Did he make that choice in the split second? And did he get any backlash from the producers?
Zero. It was Rohan who's the producer.
Of course it was like, Rohan, yeah, wasn't it? Yes.
Rohan's lovely about this. Like whatever. The actual opening words after the roller skater was, I can't believe that bitch stole my act.
I remember it!
I feel
that.
Bad now with the bitch line, maybe.
Oh, of course, like, of course.
But it was, oh my God, I had a whole thing. A whole thing. And so, because it's only a minute, so it was.
Stop. Is there any news? Lucy Russ asks, is there any news about bringing back Mock the Week on a different channel?
No, and the there's an idea of maybe doing, there's an American version apparently that people are doing. I certainly won't be doing that. The
Is that what that is? That's on already? Is
no,
that
like, no, that's a different thing. But none at all. And also I would tend to think that because we did 8 episodes in which we said goodbye, including one in tuxedos, in which we had a montage thing, we'll meet again, we've done our goodbye.
The only way that could come back after those many goodbyes is if there was money involved.
Well, okay. if a channel were to come back in, we've heard nothing. We've heard absolutely nothing. And I'm not because it was at the point of this tour, so I honestly hadn't really noticed. Yeah. In certain way, hadn't noticed because the tour suddenly kicked back in at the same time. Post COVID, the news of theatres reopening and Mock stopping came in the same week.
Yes,
and
right.
One of them was significantly more important than the other. Yes. So it's softened the blow a lot, I think.
Can we talk briefly about Taskmaster? And you remain the reign. You're the champion of champions.
Yeah.
Are you the most recent champion of champions?
No. Yes, I am the most recent champion of champions. Yeah.
And I didn't see the Champion of Champions series, but I'm a bit more familiar with the original series that you were in. And something's really fascinating. If you watch the kind of like Dara's Best Bits thing on YouTube, the comments. They're very, very pro-Dara. Like, given that you wipe the floor with so many other comics. What I think people liked, what they seemed to mention over and over again, was sort of the fact of your intelligence and creativity and humility, and clearly the fact that you were just up for a laugh. You managed to really want to win and win whilst not being a prick about it.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. Because I really wanted to win. But the reason I wanted to win is because I wanted to do more Taskmaster.
Yes.
It's very, very quickly realized this is so much fun.
It's like being so given, much fun, doesn't it?
It's like it's you're given a new escape room every hour. Like, or you know, whatever, new yes. toy, a new game, a new whatever, every hour. And I went, oh, I really want to do this well. And also, if you give me a puzzle, I want to do the puzzle well.
Yes.
But it was, I was surprised, not surprising myself, but I was very, very happy to gurn and be silly and do and be wrong and think whatever the about so and in the task in the Champion of Champions I had a wig I got a wig for the prize task and then did a gig in the wig in Auckland and they just read the script because I walked out in the wig and said, oh, there's a strange energy in the room here.
Yeah.
And so they went, what's that, the fucking wig? And so it was yeah, and so, but I had a rubber band firing up ahead. It's just silly, you know, and I'm very happy to do that, like whatever. I mean, what's exciting is how many doors it's opened, which is none. Nothing. No, when you do it and you get the end, oh, another big triumph and all that, like whatever, they immediately show the trail for the next series. Uh-huh. And it's like the end of the Truman Show, where, you know, he walks out the door and the two security goes, okay, well, what's on next? Yes. And he was like, gone, it's over, it's funny. It's just,
that's so
there's never any mention of it outside of people who really loved Taskmaster.
Was there any sort of a frisson between you and Greg, given that arguably you would be a good Taskmaster?
Oh no, I was happy. I was happy to be in his thing. I mean, I think he may. I don't know if he would have treated me differently because I'm clearly of his generation, here older or whatever. I don't think they do particularly. But I just wondered
as like you're a sort of a more experienced host of multiple comic format.
Right. Okay.
Show. I mean, yeah. Not that show. He's obviously brilliant in the Taskmaster, yeah. but there is. I wondered if there was a sort of a. All right, mate. Kind of like an energy.
I think there was a bit of the within the thing. Yeah, we both know how this has to be redone again. Let's do that again. Blah blah blah. We both know how to cut to the thing, whatever. Yeah, I think.
What do you mean? Do you mean kind of like in the moment, self-editing where you go, can we take that again?
Yeah. I mean, not to say I did them all neatly, but like whatever. For example, there's a thing about the clicking fingers. I click fingers during a task, like with the on the Champion of Champions thing, and he said, do you seem to stop clicking the fingers? And I said, well, look, I specifically said it's a jazz rhythm and the task happens between the notes. And I got a round of applause. And then somebody else said something, furthering thing, and he went, and you could see him going, no, that's done. That's got an applause.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah. That's
the edit for that is now over. And everything is not going to be part of that. Like
so you had a little moment of kind of clocking that both of you had recognised that.
I don't mean to, yeah. But anyway, but there's things like that, yeah, you would. But like the dynamic we had was very different anyway, because it was me and Sarah on either side of our children. Because we were clearly obviously both more senior and more well known, but also we were doing the things and they were going for the mad prize rather than for the actual prize, like whatever. And it was kind of fun because they were like, and even they would turn into each other and talk. The three, Fern, John and Munya, would turn into each other, and myself and Sarah were like parents in the front of the car with the three kids in the back seat. So that was sweet.
That's lovely. Last question. This is from Michael Howe, good friend of mine, former street performer. Dara is a man after my own heart, as he's into both science and comedy. My question is, how scientific does he think comedy is? And for that matter, does science have a sense of humour?
Yes, and scientists have a great sense of humour. They're very, very good. They don't tease you. I don't think it never helps you write stuff. There's a tendency to post-analyse, to rationalise backwards about stuff and come up with rules for things and why they work. Obviously in sciences, it does a lot of that anyway. But to work out how things work, whereas I think it tends to be quite instinctive when you're actually writing it. Knowing what the rule of three is, is moot unless you've got a premise, and the premise has to come from a part of your brain.
I think that's so much, given that in some ways the origins of this podcast were about trying to identify the formulas and then recognising, no, if for the most part that stuff is done backwards after you. I'm forever watching a joke and going, oh, that's clever, they've done that and that and that.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that at the time they were writing the joke. They blurted the joke or they crafted the joke. And then they may have sharpened it according to certain rules of how to sharpen something.
I think that's what it is.
But you can't. There's no formula for inspiration.
No, and sadly, the bit for spotting that X is like Y, and therefore that, and that's funny, or X is not like Y, so that's funny. It just has to pop into your head, and there's no.
And are there ways for getting you into the right frame of mind whereby the thing will pop into your head?
Traditionally, it was to be a little bit knocked off your kilter, or on stage where you're panicking, the adrenaline is running, and you can spark things out But I'm at the point where I'm going to go back to my a couple of glasses of wine, kind of a thing. Just see your
9 a.m. Couple of glasses, breakfast wine.
I've got because I'm a night writer,
I see.
Yeah, and I used to be anyway, but it's supposed to be not just January, and supposed to be all that kind of, trying to fast, whatever, trying to not do late night food. I need to be slightly tilted off the axis so I'm not self-conscious about it.
Oh.
And I'm either not self-conscious on stage when I'm in messing things out, and the panic just overwhelms the self-consciousness of it all, of, oh my god, what do you do for a living, shit, what the fuck, and then stuff just comes out, or I beat a path to something by waving my hands a lot and finding things. But those things are points where you forget yourself. I've always said that the best definition of how you write comedy is Douglas Adams' description of how you fly,
yes,
where you forget you fall but you forget you're falling.
Yes.
And that's I think you have
and
to
it's
be doing that.
It's essential not to be reminded that you can't possibly be doing it, because you'll suddenly, that will
stop
become true.
You'll immediately stop doing it, like whatever, and then it'd be like, dogs are walk funny, yay? You know, it'll be
walking around trying to have a funny idea is the worst. Yeah. Some people can do that. I guess there are those kind of pro comedy writers who you go, I need a bit on this. Yeah. And they go, pickety-ding, pickety-ding, you could do this, 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 or this. I'm in awe of that.
Yeah.
Because I think that for me, it's absolutely, it's... Yes, you have to somehow put yourself in the state whereby you don't. And it's interesting for you, you mentioned self-consciousness. Is that what you think the root of it is for you?
I mean, I think that's the thing that stops it, because you're thinking about it and thinking about yourself. You put it, And so if you are self-conscious, you are kind of, oh, here I am writing comedy, then nothing comes out like whatever. Particularly if you're looking for a very rich idea, it'll give you a routine.
Yes.
And that's even more, you know. For the long shows, we never solved the puzzle of how long a show should be. By the way, that's going to be a thing. The how long, you know, I'm just going to go and write another 2-hour show. You can start. You know, I wasn't going to. I was had you said, but that's over. Just do 60 minutes.
Yes. No. Well, because the other thing is your audience grows up with you.
Yeah.
And they expect and demand certain things of you, or they're used to certain rhythms. And you can make a big effort to change that. But if you enjoy... I mean, I think we had another question. I'll quickly try and attribute it. About the golden... Is there a golden ratio of material to crowd work? Asks Daniel Powell.
Oh, really interesting. That really interesting question. I do 20 to 30 minutes, I suppose, crowd work in a 2-hour show. So yeah, there is a sense of it, because there is a so it's not specifically the golden ratio, which is 1 + √5/2 in a ratio to 1, but it is a because I think it's how much the audience are excited about crowd work and think it's a thing, versus how much the audience would like you to have done some work. Would like to think that there is a show that exists, and so I think a section of the first half is what works for me, and then some random messing around as it appears is sort of what I've settled on. But again, I often feel sometimes maybe my shows have become too set in what they are, and I should shake that up a bit. I think there is, and I think it's I can't give an exact number, but it wouldn't be, it'd be 20%, 20-25% if you want to do that much, like whatever. And so there's a solid thing that people are getting. We never settle the issue of how long a show should be. That's a whole thing. I think you got a whole thing about whether it's introduce the support act, not introduce the support act, go out to an hour and a half, second half, whatever, or do you do the two things yourselves? There's a whole debate there to be had, and forces moving it to long, forces moving it to short. I will say this, that if I am going to stick with what I do, which is likely, I should not do what I did in Sydney, that thing, which is as I move into the third act, note that and say to the audience, these young comics with their 60-minute shows. I feel that was ingracious, I think that was. I'm better than that.
That's a lovely place to end. Thank you, Dara.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you for indulging me.
Quick fire. Are you happy?
Yeah, I am. But I haven't been on stage in 2 months, so I don't know who I am or what my value is. But I'm on stage tonight. And
oh, you'll get to... Can you text me when you remember what your value is? text me when you remember your value safely.
Yeah. Okay. The phone ring twice if I'm of value.
If it's one ring, oh God, Dara's lost.
Yeah. So
thank you so much.
A pleasure.
So that was Dara. What a lovely way to finish off a two-parter, episode 450 of the Comedian's Comedian podcast. What is that? Paper, gold, iron? I don't know. Some sort of special achievement. I shall have myself a lovely bit of trifle later on. You can watch Dara's latest special, So Where Were We? On the iPlayer, if you're in the UK or have access to a VPN, let's be honest. And you can join me for a double bill at Mac on Saturday the 4th of May, where Redacted returns, followed by Spoilers. Links in the show notes for all of those. And a quick reminder that the Insiders Club has moved to Patreon, so you can get full video episodes, extra content in video as well as audio, exclusive guest announcement and membership offerings, including the monthly Q&A. February's is out now, so catch up. By the time you hear this, I imagine March's will be out as well. And I've got a really good feeling about that one. So go to patreon.com/comcompod to get on board. You get access to the full back catalogue of extras as well. Thank you to our insider producers, Sam Allen, Jay Lucas, Gary McClellan, Dave, Miles Walsh, Nick Waite, Andrus Purdy, Caroline Schmidt, Jonathan Stewart, Richard Lucas, Paul Swaddle, James Burry, Ashley Stewart and Mike Sheldon. And a great big thank you to our special and very fancy insider executive producer, Neil... God, I haven't thought of one. Peters. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.